really was where the lights went on for me, that writing isn't frivolous. It's not selfish. It's a gift. If you can write something and get it out there and give somebody else an escape for a few hours in their life, you're doing a service.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential.
Carrie Schaefer is a best-selling novelist and a writing coach. As a coach, she helps writers overcome anxiety and step into their creative power. With a background in nursing, mental health coaching, and emotional freedom technique, she knows how to use writing to challenge her clients' inner critics and help them heal emotionally and physically. As an author, Carrie writes family dramas and paranormal mysteries, both featuring strong female leads. She's an Amazon Charts and Washington Post best-selling author. And in 2020, the Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers Association named her Writer of the Year.
Hello, Carrie Schaefer. How are you?
I am doing awesome today. Thank you, Ebony. I'm really excited to be here.
I'm excited that you're here too, because you are a best-selling novelist. You're also a writing coach, and you have a background in mental health coaching. So this is all wonderful stuff here. Carrie, can you kind of give us a little bit of info about your background? Like, how did you become, first of all, an author? And then how did you get into the space of mental health coaching?
Okay. So I long story, so I'm not going to try and make it too long. But
right. Yeah.
I think like most of us, I wanted to be a writer for a long time. And my own self got in my way. I'm going to talk about that more later. But it took me 10 years to write my first novel, which still, fortunately for it and me, is in a drawer where it belongs. It took me a long time, and then I didn't believe in myself as a writer. I didn't really believe I could do it. I didn't believe it was important. I'm going to talk more about this later. I'm sure we're going to talk about this, Ebony. So really, my story is that I had a tragic life event just before I turned 40, where my husband died suddenly and tragically. And the result for that with me was to really open my eyes and go, you know, nobody's going to just give me time to be a writer. And what if a tree falls on my head tomorrow and I don't ever get to do this? So I really got serious about writing at that point. And that's when I started making sure to make time for the writing and allowed myself to make that a priority. And then it still took me a few years after that, but I got my first publishing contract, and I still was fighting with myself a lot. And the biggest struggle, I think, for most of us is getting past that battle with ourselves to get to the writing. So my first few books were kind of hard work, although I loved them. And then I stumbled across some really wonderful, marvelous stuff that makes it so much easier to get to my writing. And my career took off, and I was able to kind of quit my day job and work for myself. And really, I'm living a writer dream heaven right now. And I get to just make time in my schedule to come talk to you.
Like, so was your day job the mental health coaching?
At the time, I was a mental health counselor actually for years. And then I got kind of burnt out, to be really honest. And I was doing crisis work for about 5 years. Mm-hmm. It was very intense, and I had some difficult experiences that happened. Actually, I had a couple of my coworkers that burnt out really badly. There was some suicides. There was like a bunch of stuff. So I needed to step back. Yeah. I'm also a nurse. I've done everything.
Wow.
girl who does all kinds of things because, you know, I don't know if it's a squirrel factor or just I love learning things, whatever. Yeah. So I went back to nursing for a while, which was when my writing career finally took off enough that I could get up the nerve to quit and go full time as a writer. And I learned to be a coach along that line as well. So I took an actual coach training, Kaizen Muse Creativity Coaching, which is unique and awesome, and everybody should have a little bit of it in their lives, I feel.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. So I have to ask you before we get into all the really good stuff, your genre, paranormal?
Oh, I have two writer identities and several different genres. So as my Carrie Schaefer self, my very first books were fantasy, actually. So I have a fantasy trilogy out there, the Between trilogy. And then I write this super fun, quirky, a little bit dark, twisted humor, paranormal mystery series, which is, I love it because it's empowering an older woman character. I had a hard time actually finding a publisher for this book because they didn't want a lead female character who was, you know, over 40 and she's turning 60. And so I put her in a retirement facility, which has some little tunnels and secret things going on and lots of paranormal dark stuff with a lot of humor. It's weird stuff, very cross genre. I love it. It's very fun to write. My more successful writer self is actually as Carrie Ann King, where I write women's fiction. And that's where I've had a best-selling novel, was high up on the Amazon and Washington Post charts for a while. And it's kind of paying for much of my life. So.
Wow. So you have a pseudonym.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah,
that's, I like that. I like that. You know, when you mentioned the more mature female lead, it reminded me of my favorite show as a kid growing up. As a little girl, you'll never guess what it was.
No, I can't. Murder, She Wrote.
That's a good guess, actually. No, but the leads were in her age range. It was the Golden Girls.
Oh, that's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, it's just, because you don't really see, I don't know of, actually there's so many shows on now with all the streaming, but at that time, you didn't, that was like the only show where you had lead actresses in a comedy that were like over, 40. Yeah. And I just found they were funny, number one.
Oh, hilarious.
And even though like I was just a little girl, I remember being able to kind of just relate to the sisterhood of it. And, you know, you had like the intellectual Dorothy, you had the dingy one, Rose. It was just, so much fun. So I think it's sad that a lot of people kind of overlook, or they think that once you're over an age, a particular age as a woman, you're like irrelevant, and not true.
Should never overlook older women. I loved Maude on that show, actually.
Oh,
like, you know, doesn't care what anybody thinks. It's like, you know, I am who I am, deal with it.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so you said it took you about 10 years to write your first novel. Now, did you ever publish that novel?
No.
Okay, so what was, why did it take you 10 years?
It took 10 years because, as I think, especially women, like men too, and I don't want to knock that off because I have a lot of male clients who also struggle with this, but I think especially as women, we're conditioned to put everybody else's needs ahead of ours. And so if we happen to love writing, I feel guilty about it, honestly. It's like I liked it so much, there's no way that I should be doing it.
Right.
It felt like a guilty pleasure, like the novels that I was always sneaking and hiding under the couch when, you know, people came in and I was supposed to be working. I literally used to do that when in my marriage, because it was my responsibility to do the housework and things. And he would go off somewhere and I'd sit and read, and then I'd hear the car come in and the book would go under the couch and I'd be up very busy when he came in. I did that. But my husband, he was a wonderful man, and I don't want to knock him at all, but he was a musician. And we both believed that his career came first. And then there were kids, and I had a job and trying to cram a little bit of writing in here or there where I felt like it. But I never was able to believe that it was important, which I think is really a big part of the puzzle for a lot of us, especially women, because we struggle to take ourselves seriously. And which leads us to the self-critic, which is another huge part of the struggle for most of us. But yeah, so it took me 10 years.
That's interesting that, so your writing, you didn't feel that your writing was important. And I wonder, where, because I think there are a lot of people that feel that way.
There are.
Because we've been, especially women, we've been taught that like raising a family is important, taking care of the house is important, perhaps being independent is important, whatever. But all this, like the frivolous stuff, like your writing, even your massages, your spa days, your girlfriend dates, all that stuff, not important. But that, the writing and the spa days and all that, really feeds your soul. I think I called Alexa, and I don't know why she just talked to me. I don't know. Anyways.
You might have something important to contribute.
But all the stuff that really feeds our soul, that's deemed not important, and that's, it's so sad.
Because, well, it is. And another thing with me in writing was I didn't feel, again, with it being important, I wanted to do something for the world. I wanted to make the world a better place. And so that's one reason I went into nursing first, actually. I hated it. I really did, like right from the beginning. And then I finally, you know, I was home with my kids for a while, which really wasn't that great for me either, honestly. If you're a mom out there that is one of those that feels bored when you're home with your children, I adore my kids and they know it. That's okay. You know, you may have callings to do other things. But the writing didn't seem, I didn't realize that it helped people. And that was a really big thing for me. So, you know, moment where it really, really kicked in for me, realizing that as writers, we're actually doing a service for the world. I was in a really dark place. There was tragedy going on. I was scared. I was by myself. I was sitting in my car and I had a book. It was a romance. It was a light romance with a bunch of humor. And I remember sitting in my car reading and killing myself laughing, you know, in the middle of all of this going on. And it really was where the lights went on for me that writing isn't frivolous. It's not selfish. It's a gift. If you can write something and get it out there and give somebody else an escape for a few hours in their life, you're doing a service.
Yes. I was talking to another author a few days ago, and he writes about humor. And he was talking about how healing laughter can be. Absolutely. And I think now he's probably maybe his like 70s, but when he was younger, his wife died at the age of 30. And he said that when she passed, he remembered, because she was very humorous, to help get through the grieving process, he just remembered all of the laughter, and he incorporated laughter in the grieving process. Right. And it just, and then really the thing I loved that he said was that, because I asked him, do you ever feel guilty about like just laughing during this time? He said, no, because I felt like I was honoring her in the laughter. And I thought, wow, that's so powerful. He ended up writing about this experience. So I think it's so powerful how that tragedy in his life led him to write this book and these mini books actually about the healing process and humor. And someone else will read that and it will help them to get through it. So it's just, writing is a service. It's a service.
Yeah. And self-care.
Therapeutic.
If you're born to write, you got to be writing. I preach this all the time. It's like, if you have that gift, if you have that need and that drive, and you're not writing, you're not a complete happy, healthy person. And so how can you be there for anyone else? Right. Like, I don't know about you, but I'm not. If I'm not writing, people start to notice. my Viking, who is the wonderful person with whom I live, he will say, have you been writing? I was like, no. Well, maybe you should. Yeah. You know, it's noticeable because I am not my best, most pleasant self when I'm not getting to it.
Yeah, that's I can, for me, you know what it is, Carrie? I think I really enjoy writing, but the thing that I really need to do is move, like exercising. Uh-huh. That's when I, like, if I don't do that, it's noticeable in my mood. That's just because just like writing, it's just so energetic and cathartic. So I think anything that that you can find, whether it's the writing or exercising or whatever, just to be able to release.
Right.
It's so much more healthier than like slapping someone across the face or cussing someone out, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. And music does it too. Music, art, you know, all of those things, crafts. I mean, you know, whatever it is, we all need a release of that energy in some way.
So when you're working with people, like what is, first of all, most of your clients, men or women?
Mostly women. I've had some male clients. I think women are more likely to be open to saying, maybe I could use a little help.
Right. Yeah. And what are the like biggest concerns? Are they concerned with, I don't have any ideas, or is it, I have this idea and I just don't know how to write it out, or it's like, I just feel really insecure about my writing. I don't think it's good enough.
Right. It's more the last, the writing not being good enough. And this goes for men and women too. I've also taught classes. So besides my coaching clients, the classes that I've seen, people I talk with, the writers that I hang out with at conferences and stuff, the biggest thing that gets in everybody's way is the really kind of mean and nasty inner critic. So, you know, we have that voice inside us that tells us you're not good enough, your work isn't good enough, what you do doesn't matter, you're never going to be successful, why are you bothering, there's no point in this. We say things to ourselves that we would never, most of us, say to anybody else.
Right.
And it's this ongoing, you know, like abusive, really, streak of you're not good enough, you'll never measure up. And so trying to write against that noise going on all the time, that's the hardest work. This is why we procrastinate. It's why we are afraid to pursue a brilliant new idea. It's what makes us scared to take risks. That nasty, ugly little voice inside our heads that gets us in trouble mostly, almost all of the time.
Yeah. And I think also, Carrie, it's like this idea that your writing has to be perfect. And if it's not perfect, like on the first draft, perfection of the first draft. And I think that's what keeps us procrastinating all the time, because it's kind of overwhelming, like, oh my gosh.
Right. And that's part of the same thing, because it's part of that voice that says it's not good enough. It's not good enough. It's not good enough. And so, you know, then we keep aiming for that perfect, which doesn't exist. There's no such thing as a perfect book out there.
Right.
This is really, if you're ever in a place where you're struggling and feeling like your stuff isn't good enough, or you've had some bad criticism and it's made you feel down, go on Amazon, pick your very favorite, most brilliant book that you've ever think that you've read, and read some of the negative reviews. And, you know, it's like, I just finished reading, what was it? I finished reading Ann Patchett's, what's it called? No, I can't remember what it's called. It was this brilliant book. It was a book that made me feel like maybe I should not be a writer. dig a ditch, something, I'm not going to, I can't do this. And then I went on to Amazon thinking maybe I'd leave a review. And the first reviews in there, there were these horrible, just totally trashing the book. And I was like, what? Yeah. What's wrong with you people? But that's how it's like that. Mm-hmm. Not everybody's going to love your stuff.
Right.
So I really feel like our job is to put out there the story that we have to tell. What is the story? What's the idea that came to me that I'm the only person in the world who can write it in this way, from this point of view? Even if it's really clumsy or clunky, somebody's going to read that and it's going to change something about the way they think or the way they feel or the way they interact with the world. That's my job. And so it's not to try to be perfect. It's to be my authentic self on the page.
And I think something that fiction writers maybe get hung up on, and I think you mentioned it earlier, and I like how you said that if you're writing a story, you're servicing people in that you're offering them an escape from their, you know, current reality. Just like going to the movies. That's why I used to love going to the movies. You go into this theater and for 2 hours you're just caught up in this story. It's an escape.
Right. It can be. Sometimes a book is an escape. Sometimes it's a friends. Like, think back to when you were a kid. I don't know. Did you have a favorite book when you were a teenager where you really related to the characters and they kind of, yeah, what was yours?
Well, when I was a small child, it was Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing.
Oh, yeah. That's such a great book.
Yes. And all the Ramona, the past series.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, Ramona was awesome.
Yeah.
And then for me, I discovered Little Women somewhere like around about middle school and Anne of Green Gables. I was a bit of a misfit because, you know, weird, geeky, creative girl.
Yeah, yeah.
Small school where most of the people that I knew were not into all of this stuff. But I could always, well, Anne, people loved Anne. And she was also weird and liked to write and was all imaginative. And Jo from Little Women, she was my heroine, right. You know. So these people are real. They're as real to me, or maybe more so than some of the friends that I've had, and were more supportive, you know? So there's that. And then there's the letters that I sometimes get. I love these. My Carrie Ann King books deal with some deeper, darker subjects. So I've written books about getting free from domestic violence. And my last one, A Borrowed Life, was about a woman who was married to a very, very repressive and controlling minister in a church. And he dies suddenly, and then she has this whole access to life and recreating herself and discovering, you know, a whole new world that is not like that at all. And I get letters from readers who thank me for writing these books because they feel seen, or they feel encouraged or inspired or hopeful that maybe they can make the break also. So books also heal, you know. Right. There's also that. I'm sure all of us have had the experience of watching a movie or reading a book that, you know, inspired some sort of hope as well.
Right. Yeah. I think a lot of us read to see ourselves in the character or in the story somehow. We really want to relate to the, and I think that's what makes it our favorite book or favorite movie, is that we feel we can relate to the character so much.
And
we
absolutely see.
Yeah.
Yeah. A book where I can't relate to the characters at all, I often just don't even want to read it. You know?
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be. I don't have to. It can be a male character. It can be a character of a different race and a different wherever. It doesn't matter. There just has to be that feeling like I can get inside this person's head and understand, you know, how they feel and approach the world, and I care about them. And then and I'll go anywhere in any book, really, pretty much.
I think when you were talking about how the notion that writing, a lot of people, we feel that our writing isn't important.
Yeah.
I wonder if that even stems from people telling us, like, there's no money in that. Why are you even doing that?
Right. There's that. There's totally that. Well, and the truth is, the number of writers in this country who are making a living on writing is very, very small. Right. You know, it's possible, but it's... There are easier ways, as I always tell people. If you're in it for the money, there are easier ways to make money. You have to do it because really you love it and you want to do it. But then that's where we run into trouble, is we have this thing that we love to do, but we're not doing it. And this is where the coaching comes in, because lots of times then we start beating ourselves up. Like, what's wrong with me? I want to be a writer, but I haven't touched my work in 5 days, and I've been binging on TV, and I've been doing this, and I've been doing that, but I've not been getting into the writing. So obviously I'm broken, I'm flawed. And, you know, then we start beating ourselves up and we feel bad. And then there's resistance, because why do you want to go do something where somebody's beating you up every time you do it? We are the ones beating ourselves up. But still, so the coaching that I do really works to calm down that inner critic, which really stems from a self-protective part of ourselves, yes. mostly usually, yeah. You know, that says, hey, you know, if you write this and you put it out there, there are going to be people who might make fun of you. There are people who won't get it. You know, maybe the people you love won't love you anymore. So it wants to keep us safe.
Yeah, I was actually talking to a psychotherapist. Her name is Bridget Dangle a few months back, and she said the exact same thing, that we have those, like, these different aspects of our personality, and so we might have like the creative writer who wants to write, but then there's that other part that's like, oh, but remember when you were like in fifth grade and you wrote something and your teacher totally reprimanded you? Do you really want that to happen again? You know, and it's really trying to protect you from being hurt. And unfortunately, it's hindering you from flourishing at the same time.
Right.
So, yeah,
right. I like to think of it, the Disney movie, remember that?
Yes, or
the
Inside Pixar Out. Movie. Inside Out.
Inside Out. Yeah, yes. That's the one. So yes. Fear. Mm-hmm. Think about that poor little fear guy. He's not evil. He's just trying to, you know. Yeah. So it's like that. And mm-hmm. so there are all kinds of, you know, techniques and tips and things that you can do to, A, learn to work with your inner critic so it becomes the partner that it's supposed to be,
right,
instead of trying to shut you down. Right. And to just kind of, you know, sneak past that fear so that you're able to get into the creative flow and love what you do.
You know, one thing I like to do, I've done a few times, it's really powerful, is to write a dialogue between me and the fear.
Yeah.
And like, just really tune in and like, I'll ask the question of, what are you scared of? And I'll just kind of sit and listen, and then I'll just write out whatever comes.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and it ends up being, and when I go back and read the dialogue, it's really revealing.
It is.
Like, something will come up that I hadn't even thought was an issue. Right.
Oh, journaling is such a powerful tool. Oh, yeah. To make it extra fun, it's fun sometimes to do like two-handed journaling. I haven't done this for a long time.
Yeah.
Have you done that?
I've writing with your left hand.
Well, you write the question with one hand and then you write the answer with the other. And it kind of gets the two different sides of your brain going. Okay,
so what hand do you write the question with?
Your dominant. Because that's your rational, you know, and then and then it's harder to write with the non-dominant hand, but it's interesting what it will tell you. It's fun to play with.
I think I'm going to try that actually. Yeah. Okay. You know what? Since you mentioned journaling, let's talk a little bit more about journaling.
Okay.
Because I was working with a client who, like many people, doesn't like journaling. Like, what is the point? Okay, I woke up this morning, I had a cup of coffee, I watched television, the end.
Oh. Right, what is the point?
Right. Yeah. I was talking to someone else the other day, and he's like, well, yeah, why am I, I'd rather, instead of writing about my bicycle ride, I would rather just go on the bicycle ride. Why sit down and write about it? So what makes journaling so powerful? Or how do you use journaling yourself? And then how do you encourage others to use it?
Right. Well, I think, you know, the point of journaling, yeah, you don't want to write about, I had breakfast, I read a book. I was like, you know, yeah, that's really boring. The really powerful thing about journaling, and I really am big on writing with a pen on paper, which has a different effect than keyboard. Yeah. We access a part of our brain that is kind of harder to get to, especially if you do free writing. So the point of free writing is
start writing,
set your timer, and you're going to write whatever comes into your head for 5 or 10 minutes without stopping. And if you can't think of anything to write, you just write, can't think of anything to write, write till the next idea comes up. So what happens then is you're accessing some of those automatic thoughts, I like to call them. We have an automatic thought channel that's going on all the time. And it's very interesting to know what that is. For a lot of us, we're kind of set on a negative fear cycle. And just understanding that is really good. And kind of letting some of that emotion go. Right now, I'm on a really positivity kick. I'm going to go right out there and be woo-woo and tell you I'm into law of attraction. And the biggest thing that I love about law of attraction is really the whole thing is find a way to be happy. Mm-hmm. I've always bought into that, you know, even before I discovered this, I was a big fan of, was that the Shakespeare quote, there's nothing good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Right. I always loved that. Yeah. And so my journaling these days, really, I wake up in the morning, I check my mood, how do I feel? Where am I at? And then I choose, this is how I want to feel today. And I'll start journaling that. Today, I want to feel inspired and energized, like I'm walking through a thunderstorm, but I'm perfectly safe and there's lightning all around me, but I know I'm not going to be hurt. And that feeling of enthusiasm and energy, I want that in my day to day. And where am I going to find it? And so I do that kind of journaling actually in the morning, which sets me up for really what I want to have happen in the day. Right. Or I'll do things like I want to be open today to opportunities so that I'm available for whatever might come up, which leads me on little adventures, like how I ended up actually here with you, because I was like, huh, maybe I'll sign up for this podcast Matchmaker FM thing. And, you know, and then, well, I can request to be a guest, because what's the worst thing that's going to happen? Somebody's going to say no. Well, doesn't hurt me any. I'm, you know, I'm adventuring. Right. Whereas if I was walking on my fear channel, I'd be like, oh, it's scary. Somebody might say no. There's rejection. Yeah. You know, I don't really want, I don't know. Do I really want to be out in the world talking about what I think and believe, because somebody might criticize me? So there's that finding your way out of that fear cycle that so many of us are stuck in, and being open to our creative life and possibilities and people and stuff. So I use my journaling to really promote that these days. That's kind of my thing.
Yeah. So I really like the way you use the journal, because, and this is, you do it in the morning.
Yeah, I do. I used to write very first thing in the morning, but the last year about, I've been taking time to do something with my mood before the day. Like I journal enough to know, like, I'm not in a good space today, but I don't want to stay that way. So you can actually use the journaling then to choose the thoughts that will shift you to the better, open, creative, trusting, adventurous space.
Yeah. And there's something about writing that down, like writing down your choice that holds you more accountable.
Absolutely.
Than you had not written it, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really powerful. I think I'm going to start doing that.
You better make a list.
Yeah. Well, you know what I used to do? Because I'm an English teacher. So when I would have my kids free write every day.
Right.
So I would free write every day while they were free writing every day. And that, I mean, the free writing in itself is so cathartic. I mean, and I would tell them, just like, as you said, I would do 5 minutes, write nonstop for 5 minutes. You don't know what to write. Say, I don't know what to write. I don't read what they free wrote at all. Right. And I love doing that as an exercise before they have to write a formal essay.
Right.
Because that just helps to, I call it like mentally vomiting all this stuff on the page.
Yeah.
And then you can kind of go through all that, and there might be one little nugget of something that you can use.
Absolutely.
To, you know, really develop. It's just it's such a powerful tool.
It is. I also find that it helps people find their voices. And that's why Julia Cameron was really big on this in The Artist's Way. She also wrote a book, by the way, for writers called The Right to Write, which is brilliant. And it's really the idea of sitting down and writing every day, it helps you find your voice. I taught a class for a while with women who didn't want to be writers necessarily. They were just, you know, a group of older women who were interested in figuring out who they were in the world. And we did this free writing thing. And it was amazing to me to hear how their confidence began to develop, and they were able to express themselves in ways that they weren't before, because they didn't think that it was okay for them to speak up. So I love that part about it as well.
Yeah. It's great. That's great. So let's say that you have the client who was feeling a little apprehensive. And so maybe they've done some free writing. They're beginning to find their voice. Then they write their story and it comes time to share it. Maybe just read a bit of it aloud or maybe publish a bit of it on the blog. That part is super scary for people, like the sharing of it. You know, before you even get to sharing, sometimes the writing, I mean, depending on the story, just being vulnerable enough to share your pain is hard. How do you coach people through that?
You know, it's different. Everybody's story is a little bit different. Yeah. But one of my favorite things, so I have to bring this up now, that works for all of the resistance and their reluctance and all of that. I am a practitioner of emotional freedom technique as well, which is it's a tapping.
I use it too. It's wonderful.
That's fantastic. So EFT, as it's called, is a technique where you tap on acupressure points on your body while holding a negative emotion or thought or belief that you would like to change. It's also great for physical pain, by the way, which is a side effect because if you do it for the other things, it helps with your pain kind of automatically. Where we can shift that anxiety, that fear, bring it down and actually bring up a more positive belief or feeling that we would prefer to have. So I've been doing EFT with my clients as well, which I find very helpful. Yeah. And then just another thing that I love, and this comes directly from Kaizen Muse, which is the creation of a wonderful woman named Jill Bodonsky, who's one of the most creative people I have ever met. One of the big foundations of that is something that she calls small steps. And this is just picking something so tiny to do that it doesn't trigger your fear, your perfectionism, your what if things. So if I was thinking, you know, if I was an author who was ready to post my work for the first time and I was scared to do that, the first small step might be something like figure out where, if you were going to post your work, and you don't have to, there's no need to do that, but if you were going to, where might you do that? So spend 5 minutes or less just exploring where you might, you know, share this. Uh-huh. So once that's done, you're like, okay, that wasn't so bad. No, that was okay. So, all right, well, if you were going to share something, what little bit of something would you share on that spot? So just going in really teeny tiny baby steps that are not big enough to get all those fear sirens blaring.
Right.
And some works really well for a lot of people.
Yeah, that's great advice to take really small steps. And like the hypothetical, like if you were to share, it just gets you thinking and you're not really committing.
Right. No. Right. And the other way to phrase that question, I like this one too, is how would it feel to, or, you know, how would it feel if you put it out there and people really loved it? You know, then how would that be?
Those kind of
questions.
When you first started writing, were you scared to share?
Yeah. I was, but, you know, okay, so this thing happened. You know how sometimes something seems really awful at the time and it turns out to have been a really good thing for you in the end?
Yeah.
It seems to happen a lot. So when I finally found time to get my writing degree, we'd been talking about it forever. So I started off as a nurse and I really didn't like it. And then I would take a class. Like every year I'd take a class and it was hard because I was working nights, but I'd take some kind of English class and then we'd move and I'd lose all my credits. So we finally settled in. Okay, this is it. I'm going to do my writing degree. This is going to be awesome. And I was supposed to be in a creative writing class with Michael Ondaatje. And for those of you who don't know who that is, he wrote this little book called The English Patient, which became a movie. He was brilliant. And I was all excited about this. Well, he went on sabbatical that year to write The English Patient. And I actually got a professor that I didn't connect well with, which was unfortunate. But I wrote this essay because I am kind of, I have to admit, I have a stubborn streak. I just, you know, I have an anxiety streak, but I also have a streak of being a little obnoxious at times. So I wrote a piece for that class that she wasn't going to like, and I knew she wasn't going to like it, but it was very, for me, it was from my heart and it really was a truth for me. So I read this thing aloud in the class and she and a bunch of the other students kind of launched into it, but you know, it created so much energy that it was intoxicating, even though I was terrified. So I remember walking out of there and my hands were shaking, but at the same time I was like, I have so much power.
Right.
Right. So yeah. That was an amazing moment for me. And also a moment where I realized that the things that I might not have the courage to stand up and say in front of a room of people, maybe I might have the courage to say that as a writer and still put out to the same group of people and therefore have, you know, a reach for what I wanted to say without having to actually watch everybody while I said it. So there's that. It's an incredible power in writing, really. You can make people cry, you make people laugh, you know, it's
But there's also, I like that story because there is incredible power in sharing it out loud. Because did you read it to the workshop group?
We had to read it out loud.
That can be, I mean, that's scary, but as you, because I remember when I was my first day of grad school, or was it my first day in this class? It was a creative writing nonfiction class. And so, you know, it was a really small class. It's like, I don't know, maybe nine of us or whatever. And then I read this, I read the syllabus, and it's like, we will be workshopping your pieces every week. And we will be giving live feedback. And I was like, I wanted to walk out the door. Right. I was so, but that first, so the first workshop, and after they workshopped my piece, I felt exactly like you did. I felt so empowered because it just created this great conversation. And I felt a little taller walking out that classroom.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like stepping outside of your comfort zone. It just empowers you.
Right, absolutely. And I do, you know, I actually, this is not what I teach in coaching, because for most people, the really confronting the fear doesn't always work well for us. But I also developed a philosophy. This was, again, after my husband died. I came up with a life belief that if I was scared to do it, I had to do it. Like, unless it was something that was, you know, dangerous to life and limb. I didn't want to start jumping out of airplanes or anything. But if it was something especially related to writing and I had a fear related to it, then I had to do it. So if I really, it still happens to me sometimes, I'll be talking to somebody. I'm like, oh, I don't want to do that. That sounds scary. And then I'm like, oh no, I have to go do that thing. But that was what got me to actually submit my first novel to, you know, to agents, to query, to go to a conference, to talk to editors. Was just kind of this little game I played with myself of chicken, really. Okay, you're scared to do it. It's not really going to hurt you. You know that. So let's just go do it.
Right, right. That fear of rejection. Can we talk about that? Because that's
That's a big one. That's a big one. And again, I think I've done some reading on this, and that one is hardwired into us. And this is like all creative people experience this, I think. And it goes all the way back to early days of, you know, where we were in small community group units, and we needed that group in order to survive. And if you were too weird, you got cast out, and you were on your own, and you weren't going to survive. So it's kind of like in our DNA to be a little worried about being too out there, too different, too, you know. So when people reject us, that strikes at that old primal, I'm not good enough, I'm not enough, I'm going to be rejected. And then, you know, well, deep down inside, maybe I'm going to die, right?
Right.
Which, yeah.
So how do we overcome that? Do
we ever overcome that? So again, really, I think the EFT.
The EFT.
EFT is big. The journaling is big. The small steps is really incredibly helpful. Building confidence. Another thing I really work with people on is collecting evidence that we are doing this, that we are good enough, that, you know, so one of the things I like to have my clients do is make a list of everything that they have done.
Yes.
You know, what have you done today and yesterday and this week? Because we like to say that we didn't get anything done. I'm not getting your word count. When was the last time you got your book? Well, I wrote yesterday, but I only wrote, you know, well, okay, that counts.
Right.
You were there, you know, you showed up to the page.
Right.
So keeping lists of that, sometimes keeping a book with every time somebody compliments you, every positive comment, anything that you've done, any evidence that maybe you are better at this than you think you are, because we're not good at accepting compliments either.
Right.
For the most part.
Yeah. You know, I was talking with a psychologist, and he was saying the same thing. We remember all of the negative comments and things that people have said, but we never remember all the successes that we've had. And right. So, yeah. It's just
wonderful. It's like, you know, it's the same thing. It's like you can go through a day and the whole day is really awesome. Everything's good. Everything's beautiful. Everything's wonderful. One person says one thing to you. Right? And you go home and you say, I had such a horrible day. It was terrible. Everybody hates me. It's like, wait, there were 99 people who loved you. There was, you know, all of these awesome things that happened. And there's this one person who had something going on where they're having a bad day. It's not even about you. And now your day is terrible, right?
I was talking with an author once and he was talking about his book, and he said that he had all these great reviews on Amazon, but there was just this one poor one, and that's all he could think about was this one poor review, even though he had the majority 5-star reviews.
Right, exactly. And, you know, as far as Amazon, there are people who go out there and leave negative reviews just to be mean. Exactly. You know, it doesn't – there's one person we know. I have writer friends, and there's one that pops up. There's a 1-star review that pops up for almost all of our books that's almost exactly the same worded. So we know that the same person who hasn't even read them is just, you know, going out of there. So – person, whoever you are, your life must be hard, and I'm sorry. You know, it's kind of how I look at that, is how, what must your life be like for you to need to do that in order to feel better? And so that helps not to take it personally.
Exactly. I was going to say exactly that. Just don't take it personally, because it's not about you.
Right. It's really about it's not. That.
It's like my mom used to tell me, like, if someone is being mean to you, I mean, they what did she say? Oh, they have the problem, not you. They have the problem, not you. Yeah. Carrie, I can't believe we're like almost out of time here.
I know. It's gone so fast.
This is just, this is a great conversation. But before we start to wrap up, I want to give you an opportunity to tell us where can we find you if you want to learn more about you.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me if you're interested in looking at what I write. Actually, you can find it all at the same place. So if you go to authorgenie.net, you'll find all the stuff about my coaching and the writing support services that I offer. You'll also find a page there with my books. So just, you can see my creds, everything that I've published so far. And if you should go to Author Genie and you decide that you want to do some coaching with me, email me and mention that you heard me talking to Ebony, and I will give you a $25 discount on anything that you choose to set up with me. So authorgenie.net.
That's so generous. Thank you, Carrie. And Carrie, do you have any last words of encouragement or wisdom for people who are apprehensive about writing, whether it's getting started or sharing?
Yeah. You know, one of the big things besides everything else that we've talked about here today is just go back to the love. Find that moment when you first felt that writing was awesome, wherever that was for you, and let yourself go back to that. Like, actually close your eyes and feel that moment. Maybe you were in a class, maybe you were at home, maybe you were journaling, maybe it was your first story, but that first time that you felt that warm, expansive, creative flow, let yourself go there. Spend some time there. Remember that feeling and let that kind of propel you forward, because that's really, it's why we do what we do, right? Once we find our why, it's so much easier to figure out all the rest of this stuff.
So wonderful. Thank you, Carrie Schaefer.
Thank you.
What a fantastic conversation with Carrie. It's just, it's refreshing to, and empowering. It's refreshing and empowering to be able to talk to a writer about just the healing power of writing, using writing to heal not only your pain, but to help heal other people's pain, using writing as a tool of self-discovery, and using writing to empower yourself. It's the act of putting pen to paper, or even if you're typing, but words in and of themselves have so much power. And there's something about creating sentences and paragraphs and stories with words that adds so much value to the people's lives who read your work, if you choose to share it, or to your own life, right? So I'm just excited to share this conversation. And if you'd like to work with Carrie, please contact her, visit her website, follow her social media. And in the meantime, you can also follow me on Twitter at Ebony Haywood and Facebook and Instagram at Motivation to Write. And you can visit zazo.com to sign up for my weekly newsletter. Thank you so much for joining me this week. And I will see you next week when I have another fabulous conversation with another fantastic person. Okay, bye-bye.